Tennessee. I gotta find that piece of me. Can I be who I was and still be who I wanna be?
You are listening to River City Current. That is the Mississippi River, the city of Memphis, and current topics from our southern corner of Tennessee. Join your host, Christian Owen, Jeannie Tabor, and Kit Garrett. We are featuring Sharon Cash, a beloved community leader who recently retired from her leadership role at the Salvation Army. Sharon talks with Kit Garrett.
Today, I am sitting down with Sharon Cash, and Sharon, it's so good to have you on today.
Thank you so much. It's awesome to be here.
Yeah, today, I just kind of wanted to talk with you more about just what your background with. You've, of course, worked with the Salvation Army for years and years, and I would love for you to just give us a little background of how you first started with the Salvation Army and started with that specifically in Memphis.
Oh, it's a very interesting story because coming to the Salvation Army was not anything more than me being a friend who had called me and shared that there was a position that was available that she believed was my job. She did not hesitate to say that it was my job. And I was working at that time with a program called Synergy here in Memphis and deciding whether or not I was going to go back to school. So I got the call, and her name is Karen Dennis. And she called me, and my respect for her and the fact that she felt that I was able to fulfill this position. And I knew the lady that had the job that she was saying was mine. And I knew at that time that she had numerous initials behind her name. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to, because I was flattered to come and do what my friend had asked me to do, I completed the application and I was called back for an interview. And when I went back for the interview, the supervisor at that time, the director at that time of the social services position had forgotten she had interviewed me because her administrative assistant was out. And she had left. And so I was okay. I was really okay with it. But it turns out that she had forgotten something, came back through the front door, and I was standing there. And she was so apologetic. And then she went ahead and interviewed me at that time and basically hired me that night.
Wow. What was that like for you to sit in that interview then after, you know, thinking, oh, this might not happen?
It was comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I say that in hindsight because it wasn't that I had anything to lose or that I had any expectation of even getting the job. And as we sit there and talk, it moved from an interview to just a conversation and her respecting my journey and how I got there and the experience I had had thus far. But when I left, she says, well, I want you to know now as I was leaving that I am going to recommend you for this position. I think that you will be wonderful in the position. And I graciously thanked her and went home with no expectations again of them calling me because I knew we had the position. At that time, I was licensed, but I'm one of the few people that were licensed before they were ever degreed. I went back and got my degrees after I began to work with the Salvation Army. So they called me probably to, it was a longer time than normal when you had a position. So when I got the phone call and they offered me the position, I was surprised. And at that time, it was basically in my head, okay, God, I don't know what you're doing,
yeah,
but I'm cool with it. And so that's how I got there.
Oh, uh-huh. Amazing. And so backtracking a little bit, what was it like for you? What was your experience like growing up in Memphis?
Oh, growing up in the general area of where the Purdue Center Pope is, mm-hmm. I grew up on a street called Exchange Street, right off of Poplar. And at that time, it was a mecca of Laura socioeconomic African Americans, but it was such an amazing community. Mm-hmm. I still have memories of being there, and moved from that location to where my home house is now, and that is on Leon, which is probably about 5 blocks, literally, from where the Salvation Army is.
Wow.
And so I was there until I graduated high school. So went to Humes. I went to Humes. I went to Gordon, Humes, Northside. So that area of town is really the nucleus of most of my experiences. Mm-hmm. And once becoming adult, I lived in Raleigh. And so just have traveled some, but really have lived in the north part of Memphis most of my life. I now even stay in St. Achilles.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And how has that place kind of evolved and changed for you over, you know, so many years in your experience living there?
When I began to work at the Salvation Army, at that time, the Hertz Village mm-hmm. existed. And it, the environment had plummeted in so many ways. At that time when I got there, you had women coming into the program so that they could stay at the Salvation Army 3 nights. And if they stayed 3 nights and had a homeless status, mm-hmm. they could move into Hertz Village. So it gives a vivid, very vivid picture of what it was in that area mm-hmm. Because to come and stay at the homeless shelter so that you can get an apartment in a drug-infested, very violent neighborhood said a lot about who the client of the Salvation Army was. So with that being said, seeing the area of town where I lived in to move from a thriving community to just being totally overwhelmed with poverty, that you could see the impact of generations of being in that area. But one of the things that began to happen when they began to remove the projects in that area, you saw really the children move from the area. So you saw it impact the schools in that area, from going from being very thriving schools to non-existent. Humes no longer exist. Of course, Manassas was torn down and rebuilt, thank God. But just so many things evolved over the years. And even looking out of my window, where my window was, to see what Hearst Village was to this multifamily community now has been very interesting. But just being able to see the valleys and the mountains of growing up in that area, becoming a young adult in that area, but also becoming a victim to the issues related to poverty, being a recovering person myself. It was, I'd say I got a PhD in life. and I often laugh, and many people know that I say this quite often, and that is that Oprah couldn't do me in one show on my miniseries because there are just so many things. So when you ask me about the evolution of the things changing in the area being in Memphis today, looking at what our city looks like now, there is sadness, but there is also a lot of joy is the best mm-hmm. word, because I know how resilient we are as Memphians mm-hmm. to keep moving forward, to understand much of this is life. In general, but also that there are communities, there are so many people that are not a part of what's on the news, mm-hmm. that are thriving, that are loving in their community, that are raising amazing children, that are taking advantage of the educational services that are often even though offered, even though that there are some challenges and so many more things that we can do, there are more people winning in Memphis mm-hmm. than not.
Yeah. And I feel like people who are proud to live here and love those communities so much. Mm-hmm. And when you ended up going back to school, that was an amazing experience getting into school for you, first of all. So I would love to hear that story about the start of that.
Early in recovery, I mean, really, really new beginning on every level. I graduated from Northside, number 14, a very large class of people, over 400 individuals, and I graduated as a junior. So 16, and I had a 2-year-old son. Then my issues with drugs and alcohol overwhelmed my life. It was all consuming. I mean, every aspect of what you may think or believe about what addiction looks like, that was a part of my life. And the day I went to commit suicide, and 34 years old, from graduating at 16 and then 34, I ended up in treatment, outside of treatment, 2 years sober. I'm working at a full-figure dress shop, and I was broke most paydays because I owed it all to the clothes that I had bought, but I look good. I look good.
Absolutely.
And so I started back going to, at that time, Shelby State, and I was just taking some general classes. That particular funding source, it was for individuals that were reintroduced to society and wanted to change their lives. And so when that money ran out, I didn't know what to do. And I talking to an advisor, and she shared, well, why don't you look at going to a 4-year college? And I'm like, okay. I called CBU, and they told me that I had an application on file. I had no recollection. I have no memory at all of ever applying for CBU. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, I went and I graduated with my undergrad in psychology. Mm-hmm. And from there, Grand Canyon University, and I have 2 masters, one in psychology and the other one in leadership with an emphasis in behavioral health. Mm-hmm. I'm a licensed addictions counselor, and I'm a ordained minister as well.
Wow, that's quite a few letters at the end of your name.
Okay.
Now.
Okay, isn't that something? that something? This is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's, for me, in my quiet time and my meditative times when I'm reflecting on, when I have those opportunities to look at myself, the intent or energy was never about, I need to have them. It was, I knew that I needed those initials to kick down some of the doors that were necessary to advocate for women and children. And so that was always in my heart. And I desired to make sure that I positioned myself to have a very effective voice based on what I knew, what I learned, and my own experience. To be able to stand with women that were that could not see themselves, mm-hmm. and to always to encourage, to for them to know that they are necessary without question, and no matter what, God can use what you don't think you have, no matter how small it is, and He can turn that into a foundation that you can stand and let the world know that you can begin again.
Yeah, and that idea of beginning again is so beautiful. And at the Salvation Army, I hear you retired, which is crazy to think about as, you know, we reflect on your journey up until this point and your career and your education, all the things that have led you to now. How has it been so far?
It has been interesting is the best word. So it has some great highs, and I won't say lows, but areas that I didn't realize or ever thought that I would have to adjust to. Mm. Just simply having to learn how to be at home.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely. I just, given after all these years of working, it was my assumption that it would just be normal. I think for the first couple of weeks, it was okay. But I found that I had to be intentional by not being up at 6 o'clock.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I really not calling and checking in with the Salvation Army, and not realizing how it was consuming in a way that it was so much of who I was, that I am having now to navigate and include processes in my life that are, that should be for a retired female. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, I'm getting more and more excited. I have been appointed executive pastor of my church.
Congratulations.
Yes.
Wow.
And to God
but
be the glory.
That doesn't sound like retirement.
And so my question to my pastor that asked me and appointed me was that, first of all, are you sure I'm the right one that God told you to ask this question of? Okay. Mm-hmm. And then having to be before God, is this my path that you have for me now? I don't want to say yes because I'm flattered and having issues with not saying, how do you say no to your pastor? Mm-hmm. And so I believe this is the next part of my journey. I am so totally accepting of what he's desiring of me now. So.
So what will that role at the church look like for you?
We are building it as we're flying. Okay.
Perfect.
So it is supporting my senior pastor in making sure that he has all the time that he needs to study and teach and preach. And so whatever I can do to be able to allow him more focus there, I'm willing to absorb that, learn how to do it and implement it. So basically, in my head, I look forward to loving on our church leaders.
So, yeah. Mm-hmm. And how have you over the years, like you said, bearing other people's burdens, how have you balanced that and been able to do that as a part of what you know, your job required, but at the same time, keep that far enough to move throughout the other aspects of your life?
Well, over the years, I have not always done it well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's important to say out loud. So but specifically for women that have challenging positions that know that we have our ebbs and flows and how we manage life. But with working with the Salvation Army and even in the position that I'm into now, is that I know without a shadow of a doubt that this is God's business. Being at the Salvation Army is God's business, that people coming in broken and hurting with their children and all of those issues that go along with that, I would be the person that caused them the most harm if I believed that I was capable of managing that. So I adopted a belief that I think it should be universal. And when you're working in that environment, is that it is God's business. And so it's up to him. I'll suit up and I'll show up and he'll empower me to do what it is. And that I won't assume that I know what to do and be okay with saying, I don't know. As far as my personal life, that's the part that I've had to learn how to do. And really understanding if I don't do self-care, I have nothing to give. I have no ability to carry anybody else's weight. Mm-hmm. And I become a part of the problem. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to be a part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what would your self-care look like then?
I make sure it has evolved over the years, okay? Meditation. Massages, a circle of people that I trust to have conversations with that's not about work, and have an opportunity to have a social life, whether that be church, whether that be out to dinner with friends, but making sure that's important. And then family is a priority. My family makes the difference. They keep me grounded, humble, and all of that. We show each other what love looks like. Coming from, I'm one of the ones that were gifted, even though my family was so dysfunctional, but having a two-parent home, having a village made a difference, and it has transcended over the years. That's what family looks like. We still gather holidays. We still gather, and we... We play cards and we talk loud and all of those things and we check on each other. And I love you is a part of our conversation. When we end conversations, we don't neglect to say that. And we understand. And over the years, it just has become a part of who we are. The human touch is so amazing. So we make sure that we hug. And I know now that that's part of my self-care. And the nucleus of it all is having a prayer life And even if all that is, I don't know what I'm doing, I need you. Okay. And including, I don't like what you're doing and how you're doing it. Okay. but having a relationship with Christ, I think, is a priority in self-care. So I'm intentional about just making sure that I do have a social group that I trust to tell me the truth. And it makes all the difference in the world.
Oh, absolutely. Having those people around you who you can lean on, that it really does make that huge difference. Yeah. And so moving forward, how do you see your role in being involved with the Salvation Army in retirement?
I would love to get a phone call that asks me to come and be a consultant about Salvation Armies across the country, really including programs. The Memphis Salvation Army, the Producer of Hope, really doesn't look like any of the other Salvation Armies across the country. And so I would love to be able to go and talk about how it was developed, how it was designed, and how it worked. So I would love that. I've established since retiring a very new, it's in its infancy, a LLC, strength-based counseling and consulting. So I'm looking forward because programming works. We went through a phase here in Memphis of there not being any requirements to elevate yourself within Department of Human Services and different things. And so over the years, I've witnessed so many things that have been started to address poverty and to look at ending homelessness. And one of the things that I know works is having a program requiring, empowering, encouraging individuals that it's an assumption that if I give you a house and you're homeless, that you're going to be okay. And that's simply not true without being empowered. Because so many people, that hard part of our society that nobody really likes to look at or even really go deep within, you have some people that show up that are homeless, that you give them a house, but they never lived anything other than on a couch, on a pallet on the floor, never had any responsibilities to cook because it was never their own, never knew how to take care of a home. It's just some basic things that you have to not assume. But if you have the opportunity within your organization to provide training and to empower people and not attack their dignity, it makes a difference. But holding people accountable and requiring, one of the areas that we are in now, and it's called Housing First. And so it has its great things about it, and then it has its flaws. And so the people that show up at the Salvation Army are the ones that are negatively impacted in many ways by programs such as that. So not to, again, diminish what happens with that, but when you empower people, you can't empower them until you've given them some basic that does not, again, diminish their dignity. I'm the first person that says that we have a whole lot of people that have a desire to help, but they may not have the gift. Both of them are necessary, but most of the time, the desire may be better helped in the data keeping and to making sure that there is enough money, you know, to keep moving forward and not necessarily working in the trenches and working with those individuals that have been harmed by sympathetic people, not necessarily empathetic people. Mm-hmm. And it makes a difference.
Right. You've stressed that difference a lot and the importance of that in order to, you know, truly provide that help. And I think, too, when you think about your impact, what would you say are your two or three primary takeaways?
You can begin again. More than one time, begin again. If you're working with women that have children, you have to work with the family and provide the same services that you provide her to her children. And that working in social services should start from the mindset that this is God's business and that you suit up and you show up.
How would you define suit up and show up?
That even when I don't know what I'm supposed to do, 80% of working in social services is consistency. I say it all the time with the working with the directors at Salvation Army, your willingness to be there makes the difference, not only for you, but it makes a difference for them. And when I say make a difference for you, is that most people that are in social services that are effective share many of the similarities of the population that you serve. And when you get that, you understand that part, it becomes knowing that I may not know what to do today, but if I'm there, there's an opportunity for me to do something.
No, I mean, I feel like you could do anything.
Oh, man. Well, Sharon, it was so great getting to chat with you again. And, you know, I'm so excited to have you on and our listeners be able to hear some of your story. I know that's just the tip of the iceberg, but thank you for coming on.
Thank you.